children in Wisconsin will no longer be required to get vaccinated against meningitis to attend schools. That's after Republican lawmakers voted to temporarily undo rules put in place by the state health department. It's Wednesday, March 8th. This is Wisconsin Today. Good morning. I'm Alex Crow. Coming up, Wisconsin's maple syrup producers had a great year last year, and Hope Kerwin reports on the outlook for this year's syrup season. Plus, Governor Tony Evers makes the case for increasing state funding for local municipalities. Stay with us.
You tune into Wisconsin Public Radio for news you can trust, conversations that draw you in, and music and entertainment that make your day better. The largest source of funding for everything you value on WPR is listener support. Join the team that makes WPR possible. Become a sustaining member. Make an ongoing monthly gift and share WPR with your entire community. It's easy to sign up at WPR.org.
A state legislative panel heard hours of heated testimony yesterday as Republicans prepare for a vote to undo updates to Wisconsin's vaccine requirements. Sarah Lear reports.
The updates from Wisconsin's health department add meningitis to the state's list of required vaccines for children entering schools and daycares. They also require parents to get a medical provider's sign-off if they want to cite prior infection as a reason for skipping the chickenpox vaccine. Dr. Jennifer Clevin with the Wisconsin chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics defended the rules, noting they're in line with national recommendations.
Seeing children ill with diseases that could be prevented with vaccines is devastating to providers and devastating to families.
But Republicans who control the Rules Committee say such updates place an undue burden on parents. They're poised for a vote to suspend the changes. Parents can get exemptions to any of Wisconsin's required vaccines by citing medical, religious, or philosophical reasons. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Governor Tony Evers says there's, quote, no question that the state will change its approach to shared revenue under his administration. He made the remarks at a Madison luncheon hosted by WisPolitics. Evers has called for spending 20% of the state sales tax on funding for local communities. Republicans have suggested they're open to the issue, but have not endorsed a specific dollar amount. Evers said local funding has barely increased in the last 15 years.
That's crazy. How can you operate a municipality? I don't care if you're 300 people township or city of Milwaukee. You cannot operate with that.
Republicans have pushed back on another Evers proposal to let cities raise sales taxes to increase revenue. With temperatures again hitting the 40s across southern Wisconsin this past week, some maple syrup producers are already collecting sap. Hope Kerwin has more on the start of syrup season.
Scott Walter owns Driftless Gold, an organic maple syrup company in Richland County. He's already tapped his trees, but many producers to the north estimate they have at least another week before their season starts. Just like most crops, Walter says producers always worry about timing the start of the season just right.
Given that syrup producers make their living throughout the year based on what happens over a 3 or 4 week period in the spring, you're always wanting to catch every last drop of sap.
2022 was a great year for maple syrup, with Wisconsin producing almost 21% more than the previous year. Walter says conditions are lining up for another productive season, but it all depends on whether the state continues to see warm days and freezing at night, which keeps the sap flowing. Hope Kerwin, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A conservative group and lobbyists for the real estate industry are asking lawmakers to remove hurdles for developers as Wisconsin faces a shortage of affordable housing. Construction costs and housing prices have climbed in Wisconsin along with interest rates. That and a shortage of supply is putting home ownership out of reach for many young workers. Kurt Witinski is a former lobbyist for the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. He says he's doubtful that mandating changes to zoning for all communities would fix the state's housing crisis.
Even if you do pass some mandates, it might not result in the great increase in housing that you're looking for, that we're all looking for.
An executive with the Wisconsin Realtors Association says local governments don't always award permits to developers, even when they do meet all the requirements. Attorney General Josh Call is urging the legislature to continue funding the state's Office of School Safety. As Sean Johnson reports, the office relied on federal funds in the last budget, which have largely dried up.
The Office of School Safety operates a statewide threat reporting tip line and helps districts follow best practices for securing schools. It relied on federal coronavirus funding in the last budget, but will need state funding to keep operating in the next one. At a Capitol press conference yesterday, Attorney General Josh Call called school safety an ongoing challenge that requires continued attention.
It's not something where you have a one-time fix and school safety solved. We need to continue having an office that focuses on school safety.
Call asked for more than $2 million in state funding to continue the office. Evers' budget called for about $1 million. GOP leaders have said they'll build their own budget starting a couple months from now. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the break, we'll hear a story from Wisconsin Life about a peninsula on Lake Michigan that was once the site of a thriving community of Polish immigrants. We'll be right back.
You know you can count on WPR for news that's important, music that makes your day better, and conversations that make you think. We hope you'll make a financial contribution to support the radio service you rely on, and in fact, we count on it. The single largest portion of our budget comes from listener support. If you're not a member yet, make a gift of any amount today at WPR.org. Thank you.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCullum with a story of an historic part of Milwaukee.
There's a peninsula just off Lake Michigan in Milwaukee that has lived many lives. Today, Jones Island is home to a sewage treatment plant, piles of salt, and rail cars. But it was once home to thriving communities.
Indian, French-Canadian, Yankee, and Polish, each utterly erased by the one that followed before today's landscape emerged. Few places in Wisconsin have seen such profound change, and fewer still have so many tales to tell.
Jones Island is the subject of a new Milwaukee PBS documentary by author and historian John Gerda. In People of the Port, a Jones Island documentary, Gerda talks about the Potawatomi who lived there and used the area to fish, gather wild rice, and race ponies. After the Potawatomi were displaced, European immigrants began settling down on Jones Island. As Gerda tells us, a Polish immigrant community flocked to the area, drawn in for the same reasons as Jones Island's earliest settlers, which was fishing.
It's not a tourist attraction. Jones Island lies just blocks from downtown Milwaukee, but visitors are few. What they see is freight yards, fuel tanks, docks, the Danhone Freeway Bridge, and the largest sewage treatment plant in Wisconsin. Here was the city's front door in the age of sail, and here is the hub of its urban infrastructure today. What it lacks in glamour, Jones Island makes up for in stories. For nearly 50 years, from the 1870s to the 1920s, the peninsula was the site of a commercial fishing village settled by immigrants from the Baltic Sea coast of Poland. These Kashubs, as they were called, numbered more than 1,500 by the turn of the 20th century. First in rowboats near the shore, then in motorized tugs that chugged over the horizon, they brought up 2 million pounds of fish in a typical year, including lake trout, whitefish, herring, perch, and sturgeon. Their catch was a critical source of protein for Milwaukee's growing population. Fishing also provided a livelihood for one of the most unusual urban villages in America. Jones Island was a colony of squatters who occupied their land without benefit of title. Their homes were makeshift, their street system was improvised, and their shoreline was a maze of fish sheds, boathouses, and massive wooden net drying reels. The setting was so picturesque that artists from the mainland were among the most frequent visitors. What they found was a complete human community. Jones Island was a complex web of interrelated families who supported social clubs, a baseball team, a chorus, and a total of 11 saloons, each serving its own version of the Friday night fish fry. The Kashubs were also faithful members of St. Stanislaus Catholic Church. Whole families could be seen every Sunday morning, rowing across the Kinnickinnick River in their finest clothes to Mass on Mitchell Street. Jones Island may have been picturesque, but its days were numbered. As mainland Milwaukeeans enjoyed electricity, running water, and indoor plumbing, the Kashubs were still getting by with kerosene lamps, contaminated wells, and backyard privies. By 1910, as the city's population surged toward 400,000, there was an urgent need for two major improvements, a sewage treatment plant and an outer harbor. Jones Island was the obvious location for both. In 1914, the city condemned the fishing colony. Family by family, its residents moved to the mainland. In less than a decade, the number of dwellings plunged from more than 200 to just 6. Most of the holdouts lived on the riverside of the peninsula. Their unofficial mayor was Felix Struck, a one-time fishing tug captain who had come ashore to run a weather-beaten saloon called the Old Harbor. His time was finally up in 1943, near the midpoint of World War II, when Struck was evicted for reasons of what authorities called port security. The old fisherman moved to a new home on the south side. 5 months later, he was dead. In a moment of inspired whimsy, the city turned the site of Captain Struck's last stand into a park and named it for the island's dominant ethnic group. Kashub's Park is the smallest in Milwaukee, about the size of a basketball court, but it occupies a unique place in the city. In the midst of today's manufactured landscape, the park is the last reminder that Jones Island was once a living, breathing human community.
John Gerda is an author and historian who lives in Milwaukee. He also co-created a new Milwaukee PBS documentary, People of the Port, a Jones Island documentary. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And that'll do it. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today. I'm your host, Alex Crow. Our producers are John Davis and Rob Mentzer. Catch us wherever you get your podcasts every weekday morning, and you can always find more news anytime at WPR.org. Have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.